Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
Hello there and welcome to Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. Amanda Howard, the serial killer whisperer, is always full of surprises. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Robert. And a surprise, I have to say happy birthday. So when this goes to air, it's already been your birthday, but I thought I'd wish you happy birthday on air as well.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, a sprightly 47.
I know, right?
The weird thing is I didn't realise my birthday was coming up, and then we hit June and I went, oh, my birthday soon. I couldn't have even told you if it was on a Saturday, a weekday or whenever. I had no idea. That's just where I am in life at the moment. I don't really care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, usually yours is basically around the Queen's birthday long weekend, but the long weekend was a week early this year, so it totally threw me.
Yes, I always thought it was in honour of me being a great big queen, but apparently not. So, Amanda, we're not doing a serial killer today. This is 2 weeks in a row we're not doing a serial killer. What's going on?
Well, we've got to mix things up sometimes and keep people interested. So we're doing a mass murder this week. We're doing Dylan Roof. Mm. So it's a recent case. So this was a very interesting interview as well.
Okay. Well, we look forward to getting to that in our psychological profile. In the meantime, let's get to the news. The family of an East County man murdered in 1983 by a notorious husband and wife serial killer team wants to make sure the convicted couple stays in prison for the rest of their lives. NBC News 7 in San Diego has more.
He loved animals. Dad would never let us have a dog, but he brought a dog home once. He got to keep it.
Diane Winder of Spring Valley with heartfelt memories of her brother. John Hellyer was killed in January 1983 in Santa Rosa, California. He was 30 years old. Suzanne and Michael Bear Carson confessed to the murder and at least two others.
You don't really understand how that feels until it happens to your family. You know, I was in shock. You know, I couldn't believe that this could happen.
It was a notorious high-profile case back then. They were dubbed the San Francisco Witch Killers because they thought their victims were witches. John Hellyer picked up the couple as they were hitchhiking. He gave them shelter, but then an argument.
She claimed that her husband had to kill him because he inappropriately touched her, which I'm sure he didn't. They probably sat together and his leg might have touched her leg, and she used that as an excuse. I don't know.
Witnesses say he was shot at point-blank range as he begged for help. The couple was sentenced to 75 years to life in prison for the three murders. Tomorrow, Michael Carson, who's now 70 years old, will have a parole hearing.
I really don't think they have a chance in hell to get, you know, paroled.
Danny Hellyer, John's younger brother, now lives in Utah.
How can there be people like that on this earth that would do something so awful to kill somebody? I mean, to me, that's just beyond my imagination.
Danny and Diane both plan to take part in the hearing via Skype. They say the couple has never expressed remorse.
And I think he would kill again because I think that's all he knows.
I find that interesting, Amanda, that the couple have never expressed remorse. Wouldn't you even do that just to look good for the parole board?
Well, I mean, this is a couple that actually held a press conference to confess to the crimes. I mean,
right.
This case is just beyond belief. But then they recanted their confessions and they've done that forever. But parole boards aren't dumb. I mean, well, sometimes we don't like their decisions, but they know if someone's going to suddenly go, oh, yes, I'm sorry, I want forgiveness for what I've done. But this couple have never done that. And there's a lot of killer couples that do this, and they actually play off each other to see who can go the longest and not break.
Right.
But Michael Bear Carson is a violent man, and I totally agree that if he was released from prison, he would likely kill again if he was fit enough to.
Well, let's hope they don't release him. David Brooks, who was serving a life sentence for his part in the murders of six teenagers in 1973, has died at the age of 65. Brooks turned himself in over the deaths in Houston, Texas, after Dean Correll was shot by Elmer Wayne Henley. Amanda, 65 is not that old.
Yeah, no. I was actually quite shocked to hear that David had died. Now, this is an interesting case, and these two boys, like David Brooks was, I think he was just over 20 at the time that he handed himself in, but this is a case that has always had a soft spot for me, because I believe that both Wayne Henley and David Brooks were victims themselves of Dean Correll. So Dean was a procurer of young boys, and he got these two young teenagers to help him find them by having them bring the boys from school and things like that. So these two boys then got to a point that, like, David Brooks was too old, and so he sort of left this crew of killers, and Elmer Wayne Henley actually ended up killing Dean Correll and then confessing to the police of what he'd done and what they had all done collectively. So the fact that both David and Wayne have spent their entire lives basically in prison is quite sad. And I don't actually know David's cause of death, but I would say that it was probably a disease, maybe cancer actually got him.
Oh, okay. A very interesting case. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to do this one in the future.
Oh, we will, yeah. And I mean, I've been speaking to Wayne for many, many years now too. So I actually have sort of a bit of personal insight into this case as well.
Oh, let's do that one soon. I'm really, yeah. You hate it when I do this. When I do this, because I see a news story and I go, oh, this sounds like a really interesting case. And you're like, yes, it's on the list.
Well, it is. It's definitely on the list. It's not in this season, but I can bring it forward like I've done a few times when you find a news story that piques your interest.
We should do it next week.
No, because I've already done next week's episode.
Okay, so. Fair enough. All right, let's move on. It'll be coming in the next few weeks.
Yes.
A possible serial killer in the making. That's how a police chief has described a man they've arrested who they believe is responsible for a string of stabbings in Eureka, California. Wesley Lee Starrett is accused of murdering Roger Mitch Clark, and police also believe he was responsible for two other unprovoked stabbing attempts, one involving a 43-year-old man and another a 38-year-old woman. Amanda, a serial killer in the making.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a lot of people that actually go to jail for one killing or maybe two that they know that there was a propensity for them to go on and kill a lot more people. So there is people that police come across that, yeah, had they not been caught so quickly, they may have gone on to kill a lot more. And as we can see, this guy had two failed attempts as well as one successful. So, you know, it does happen, and I think it's more to do with these things that we are going to catch them quicker, that we're actually going to decrease the numbers of serial killers because we can catch them. So this guy, you know, this could have gone on to be 10, 20 victims had they not caught him so quickly.
Well, Eddie Mosley, known as the Rape Man, has died. He terrorised women in South Florida in the 1970s and 1980s, and his sexual crimes were so widely known that parents warned their daughters to avoid him if possible. His body is now being tested for COVID-19 after 16 positive cases were discovered at the Sunland Centre where Mosley was being held. Amanda, Mosley was declared unfit to stand trial.
Yeah, so this does happen sometimes, and so they do hold them in like a prison for the criminally insane. So though they aren't able to actually pin the crimes on them in a court of law, they have enough evidence to detain them under the Mental Health Act. And so this is what's happened with Eddie Mosley. And as we can see, he has passed away. And there is a fair few killers that I think may pass away because of the close propensity that they have in prisons and COVID-19 getting in from the outside. It will be interesting to see if we see a few more victims of COVID.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, we will take a quick break and then come back with our psychological profile on Dylan Roof. And if you want to subscribe to the podcast and actually help us out, there's a couple of things you can do. You can go to iTunes or your favorite podcast player and leave a 5-star review. That will help other people find us. There's a link in the show description of how you can actually just donate a couple of bucks our way just to make sure that the podcast keeps going. Or you can subscribe to Patreon and get some extra benefits as well. Completely up to you and no hassle if you don't do that. But in a moment, our psychological profile is coming up. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And Robin Robbo. Media executive Rob McKnight.
Something brand new is coming to your social media feed.
Big Brother winner Ben Norris.
This is something bold and informative with a side of humour.
And journalist David Robbo Robinson.
It's truly going to be something different.
The Ben Robin Robbo Show starts April 20. Go to tvblackbox.com.au/BRR for more information.
It's the Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo Show.
Warning, this episode discusses race and hate crimes in the US. With the current climate in the US, if you feel this episode may be a trigger for you, we suggest you skip to the next episode. On June 17, 2015, 21-year-old Dylan Roof walked into the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in South Carolina, where a Bible reading class was being held, and shortly afterwards opened fire. In the attack, Roof killed 9 people and injured a 10th. He fled the scene, but many recognised the man, and an APB was put out on him. He was arrested the following day in North Carolina. Amanda, as always, before we start playing the police interview, describe the scene for me.
Well, this is so strange. For 2015, the footage of this interview is so bad. It looks like it is a VHS tape from 1923. But it is really that bad. It's severely overexposed. The minute details that we usually look for you know, closing eyes and things like that, we're actually going to lose in this case.
Right.
But the sound, though, is really, really good. So the room is actually larger than what we normally have seen in interrogations. It's actually, I would call, a boardroom. So it's actually got a really long oval table that you would see in boardrooms. It's got the fancy executive high-back chairs. Roof actually sits on the right side of the room and is alone when the agents actually come in, and he's quickly uncuffed as we often see, and it is 1:30 the day after the mass killing. So as the two agents introduce themselves, Roof is actually looking at his wrists where the handcuffs were, and this sort of suggests that they were hurting him, you know, did, you know, poor kid, you know, he just killed 9 people. But anyway, he's actually wearing the clothes that he had on the day before, so he hasn't even been stripped yet. So it's something that we haven't seen before as well, is that the agents actually get out their badges and put them in front of him to show their IDs. It's just something strange that they haven't done before.
Yeah, they're in a police station, so you don't really need to prove your identity, surely.
Yeah, so it's quite odd.
Well, they go through his rights and then ask a few questions about his life.
We want to talk to you about some stuff. I'm sure you probably already know that we want to talk to you. You know, we're hoping you want to talk to us and tell us your story and, you know, what happened, everything, your side of the events. I mean, I know a lot of stuff's been going on, a lot of stuff said and out there and everything.
Well, I don't know anything about it, to be honest. I mean, about what's been said.
Right, but we want to talk to you about what happened. All right. Here's the thing, right? Before we can talk to you, we have to go through and give you your rights, all right? And so what we're going to do, Craig's going to read them to you. I'll basically explain them to you and go through each one, but anyway, we'll go again. But you do have the right to remain silent, all right? Now, if you can always decide anytime to exercise these rights, you know, at any time you want. You can say, oh, you know what, I don't really want to talk no more. That's fine. You have the right to have an attorney present with you prior to and during any questioning. If you cannot afford to hire an attorney, we will be appointed to represent you prior to and during any questioning. But we're going to go through this form right here, and basically it's a form that they have up in North Carolina. And this basically just says, hey, that we can talk to you and you can talk to us. And we can just go through here, figure out what happened, where we're at, and all that, okay?
All right, the police officer, federal agent, okay, whose name appears below, told me that he's with, or with the FBI, so I'm Agent Stansbury, myself, and explained to you, okay? And want to question you about the following offenses, all right, which you're, so before you ask any questions about what we want to speak to you about, we want to make sure it's clear that you have the following rights, okay? You don't have to answer any questions or say anything. Do you understand that? Can you place your initials right next to that saying you understand that?
Just two initials?
Yeah, your first initial and your last. There you go. All right? Anything that you say can be used as evidence against you in a criminal case. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. Can you put your initials there, please? All right. You have the right to speak to an attorney before or after questioning, or have an attorney present with you during questioning. If you can't afford to hire an attorney, one can be appointed for you and made one would be obtained for you. Do you understand that? If you're willing to discuss the offense under investigation or without a lawyer present, you have the right to stop questioning at any time or speak to an attorney before answering any other questions. Do you understand that? Put your initials there. Okay. What I'd like you to do, can you read this for me? I want to make sure you understand that.
You want me to read it out loud?
Yeah, read that out loud, this little paragraph right there.
Okay. I have read the statement of my rights and I understand what my rights are. I am willing to make a statement and answer questions. I do not want a lawyer at this time. I understand and know what I am doing. No promises or threats have been made to me and no pressure or coercion of any kind has been used against me by anyone.
Okay. Having all these rights in mind, you wish to speak to us?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Can you just sign your name right there, please? Very good.
So, Dylan, you're from South Carolina, right? Mm-hmm. You lived there your whole life? Where'd you go to school?
Yes. In Lexington, South Carolina, White Knoll High School, but then I went to Dreer High School in Columbia, but then I dropped out of it and went to online school, and then I dropped out of online school, and then I just got a GED, that's it.
You got your GED?
Yeah, but that's it.
Okay. What kind of work do you do?
I don't have a job right now, but the only job I've ever had was just doing landscaping. You know, like lawn maintenance, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what it was.
Okay. And where in Columbia did you live? Did you live with your mom or your dad? Or?
Yes. Eastover?
Eastover?
Uh-huh. Sort of.
I know where Eastover is.
Yeah.
Out Garnersbury Road?
Right.
Okay. Was that your mom or your...
Well, that's my mom's boyfriend's house. But, I mean, I lived there.
Okay.
But lately, you know, I've been living, you know, at my dad's house, too, a little bit. So.
Okay. Where's he live?
He lives right in Columbia, right downtown.
Okay.
Right near Park Street.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Anyone else think he sounds like the counselor from South Park? Okay. In all seriousness, though, he seems pretty chill, but I got to say, he doesn't sound like the smartest of killers.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we have here is someone who has a very unsettled background. So he was sort of shared between both of his parents and their partners. Mm. And he does have OCD and he's poorly adjusted to actual life. And as he said, he changed schools frequently and he has a non-existent employment record. He was just one of these kids who preferred to stay home and play computer games and get high. And, in fact, he actually had a couple of encounters with the police prior to the shooting, and that was to do with him being a bit creepy around other people that they actually called the police on him.
Right, okay. The agents, they've gotten through the getting to know you chit-chat pretty quickly. They go straight in.
Well, can you tell us about what happened last night?
I went to that church in Charleston, and I did it.
You did what? Well, you, I mean, I know it's tough sometimes to say.
It's not that I don't want to say it because I don't want to make myself seem guilty. I just don't really like saying it.
But I know sometimes we have to face those things, the realities.
You know. We don't want to put any words in your mouth. That's why, that's why Agent Stansbury is asking what it exactly is that you did do.
Well, I killed him. Well, I guess. I mean, I don't really know.
Well, I mean,
I don't know how many people were.
So did you shoot him?
Yes.
What kind of gun did you use?
A Glock 45.
Okay. Was that your gun or?
Yes, I bought it from the gun store.
Well, which gun store did you buy that from?
Shooter's Choice.
In West Columbia, Shooter's Choice.
Well, it's in Columbia. I'm not sure.
The one they got the indoor gun range there.
Yes,
yeah.
I've never used it, but
yes, they
have one.
Okay, so
it's another one. Well, thanks for listening. We've got the confession, Amanda. We're all done.
I know.
Wow. This interrogation is the antithesis of almost every confession we do. There is sometimes a bit of fluffing about before they confess, but here it's like the first thing he says, but there was something in there too. He laughed when saying he used a Glock 45. Why was that?
Well, it seems to be that he's actually proud of his weapon choice. And now he shouldn't have been able to get a Glock 45 because he did have a criminal record. It was supposed to be a misdemeanor, but it was actually put in as a felony. So he shouldn't have been able to get a Glock 45. And so he's laughing because he knows that it was something that he shouldn't have had. And he'd actually been sort of stockpiling weapons for quite some time. So he actually was caught with a number of weapons and ammo in the car, but he loved his Glock 45 apparently.
Right. Well, now the agents bring Roof back to the shooting.
So all right. So going back to the church, you pulled out the gun and you shot him, started shooting people, or how?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, so do you know how many people you shot?
If I was gonna guess.
Five.
Maybe. I'm really not sure. Exactly.
You just start shooting. Well.
Four, five. I'm not sure.
Did you say anything to them before or after or during?
No, I didn't say anything to them before anything.
Before anything. What about after?
Well, I think like during, I said like don't talk to me or something like that, you know.
That's why you were shooting?
Well, but like in the middle, you know.
There is a disturbing element listening to this. The way Roof is answering, he sounds like he might be mentally challenged. He's slow to answer and his speech almost sounds slurred.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the same thing too. I thought, okay, this is basically someone who has a disability or a deficit, and they've actually gone in and done this, not really considering what they had done. But in fact, the absolute opposite is true, and he actually has quite a high IQ. And at trial, he was even going to represent himself.
But don't they all do that, though?
Yeah, I mean, we hear it often. But, yeah, he actually had to go through a competency hearing to prove that he could, and he was found to have an extremely high IQ. Now, that's according to the judge, but the evidence I found says that he has an IQ of 125, which is good, but it's not great. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't call that an extremely high in intelligence, but, you know, it does make me think that he could be a savant. So he might be intelligent in some things and not in others, which is why he sort of can't think and speak so quickly. But I couldn't find anything that proved that diagnosis. But in the competency hearing, a psychiatrist actually stated in court that Roof is actually in the prodromal phase of an emerging schizophrenic spectrum disorder. So he was on the cusp of being a schizophrenic. So it does suggest that there is sort of some mental deficit that was occurring, that and he was about to have a complete psychotic break. So it's, you know, it's sort of, he seems to be in two different parks with this. It's quite strange.
All right, let's go back to the tape.
How long were you at the church before you actually before you pulled your weapon out? You said yourself you shot, you think, maybe five or so people. How long were you at the church before you decided that you were going to do that?
Well, I just went in the church, you know, and then I sat down with them for like maybe 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Could have been 20. It could have been 10, but I think it was probably around 15.
Were they having a meeting or something? Or?
No. This was a Bible study class.
So you knew the Bible study class was going to happen.
Yes.
So he's sitting there for a while before opening fire. Other mass killers have done that too, haven't they?
Yes, they do, and I find it quite strange. I mean, if I was in their place, I think I would go in shooting. I don't think I would sit there, but this is something that we're going to learn in this interview, you know. But there are others that have done that, like Martin Bryant in Port Arthur did that, Wade Frankham, the Strathfield Moor killer, did it, even James Holmes, the killer Joe in the Batman film, did the same thing. He literally bought a ticket, went, sat in the front row, watched part of the film, and then started firing. So it's not uncommon, but it's not common at the same time, you know. I think it's that they arrive at their situation, at their destination, then they decide what they're going to do, and they sort of think about if they're going to do it. They go through almost like a final check before they open fire. You know, most of them actually do dry runs of the places, and Roof had actually been to the local shopping centre several times and asked questions that would have suggested that was his first place that he was going to do this attack. But he was actually banned from the shopping centre because he had been asking disturbing questions of women who worked there. So it looks like that he then changed his focus to the church purely because it did have black parishioners.
So many red flags with this guy.
Yeah, there is. There is quite a few. So, you know, it looks like that he was planning that this attack and what he wanted to do. He just had to find the perfect place.
Well, then he got to the church, he sat down, as we said, and then he started shooting. Let's take a listen to how he describes it.
Well, right before, or when you pulled out your gun and started to shoot, or right before, did you say, remember what you said, or if you said anything to the people when you pulled? Because, I mean, if you suddenly pulled out a gun, and I'm like...
Right, that's what I did. I didn't say anything to them before I pulled it out.
Did they see?
Not even one word. I didn't say anything to them.
Did they see or anybody react to you as you pulled the gun out, or were you already shooting before they knew what was happening?
I mean, they reacted after I shot.
Yeah, right, we understand. Yeah.
Right.
I guess my question, it might have been a bad question. I was just trying to figure out, you know, if I pulled a gun out, and everybody saw it, people might start to run or whatever.
Oh, no. It was very fast. It was not like I was like, you know, it was like quick motion.
So can you show what were you sitting down and you did it, or did you stand up or what?
Yeah, I was sitting down the first.
Yeah. Can you show me like what you did? I mean,
yeah, it was just like, you know,
did you like this or just,
yeah, like, you know,
and just start shooting it?
Yeah.
So, Amanda, he sort of has skimmed over it. Explain to me exactly what happened in the shooting.
Well, they were all sitting on various tables. So there was about 10 people in the room and he sat at one of the tables, but so he could see everyone that was there. And he literally took his gun out of his fanny pack sort of thing on the front of him, and he started shooting from the seated position. So it wasn't sort of this, you know, like we see in films where they stand up and the chair goes backwards and they open fire. He literally calmly just started shooting from his seated position.
Wow. Well, he then describes how he entered with all the weapons and ammo.
We'll go back and I'll ask you some more questions.
necklace.
See, I had it in a bag.
It was in a bag.
The bag's there. I dropped it.
You dropped
it. It was a black bag. Look, it was like a thing you can buy at a sporting goods thing, you know, for military people to hook on their whatever, their vest or whatever. But I just put it in my belt. And I had all my magazines and the gun in there. When I walked in the church, this thing was right on me, in front of me, you know. And I was like, oh my God, they're gonna see it, you know? And obviously they did, because I mean, this thing is big, it's heavy, you know, because it's got, what, 7 magazines, and I put 11 bullets in each magazine. They can hold 13, but I didn't want any jam, like it to jam or anything like that. So, you know, but anyway, it's still really heavy. Anyway, they saw it, but I just sat down because I guess they just didn't say anything. You know, and then I was sitting there and I was like, you know, just thinking about whether I should do it or not. You know, that's why I was sitting there for 15 minutes, just like, you know, like, because I know I could have just walked out, you know, because they didn't say anything to me about what, you know, the thing on my belt. So I could have walked out, you know, and that's what I was just thinking, you know. But then I just, you know, like, I just, like, I don't know, it's like, not, I want to say spur of the moment, but, you know, I just finally decided I had to do it. And that's pretty much it.
This is really interesting, Amanda. So he's sitting there giving himself a pep talk. He almost had that sliding doors moment where he could have got up and walked out, but he actually made the choice to go ahead with his plan.
Exactly, and it proves that he was probably ready a few other times as well, and this was the one. This, he knew that he had the right demographic that he wanted to target, and he actually says that he walked in with all of these magazines on him and no one said anything, and so his heart would have been pumping. He would have been freaking out, wondering if they could take him down, but he was accepted. When he walked in, they didn't say, you know, this is a black-only church or anything like that. They welcomed him, asked him to sit down. They gave him a pamphlet, and then he decided to shoot them after giving himself a pep talk saying, this is it.
Well, the agents actually ask him that, and the interrogation takes, unfortunately, a disgusting turn.
Why did you have to do it?
Oh, I had to do it.
How come? I mean, that's what I don't want to know.
Well, I had to do it because somebody had to do something. Because, you know, black people are killing white people every day on the streets. And they rape white women, 100 white women a day. That's an FBI statistic from 2005. Yeah, you know, that's 10 years ago. It might even be more now, who knows. It sounds unrealistic, but you break it down, that's 2 a state. It's really not unrealistic at all. It could not be more. You know, the fact of the matter is, what I did is so minuscule to what they're doing to white people every day, all the time. And just because that doesn't get on the news doesn't mean it's not happening. You know, everybody knows that the news is bias for black people. You know, we can pretend it's not, but we know it is.
Wow. In light of the current situation with George Floyd, this is amazing to hear in such a bad way. And you can totally understand the anger that we're seeing out on the streets with the Black Lives Matter protests. This is the kind of racism and discrimination people of colour are dealing with.
Absolutely. It's pretty horrific. And for him to come and say things like that as evidence, you know, he goes, you know, I'm quoting FBI statistics. He is part of the problem, you know, and his whole attack was racially motivated, and he wanted to kill black people, and that's why he chose a black church, you know, and it's just so disgusting. This was a pretty big case, but it's not huge compared to people like James Holmes. That was even bigger, but it just proves that the racial hatred in the US is endemic and pandemic, and it's something that they really need to look at and fix. But it's people that have these thoughts in their heads and just talk about it like this. It just makes me furious to think that people, because of the color of the skin, that they don't like them. It just I don't know, it perplexes me.
Yeah, well, just like us, the officers are dumbfounded and they try to regroup. They appeared to have not realized this was a hate crime.
You said you had to do this because, so basically what you're...
I had to do it because nobody else is going to do it. Nobody else is brave enough to do anything about it, you know. Back in the late 80s and the early 90s, you know, we had skinheads and stuff like that. There's no skinheads left. There's no KKK. KKK never did anything anyway.
So basically, you were trying to make a statement or prove a point on behalf of the white race. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in a way, I guess.
Did somebody help? Did you talk to people or anybody in particular about this prior to making this decision to do this?
No.
So you came about this decision solely by yourself.
Right.
And did you? What's the reason why you? Because you said you'd never been in that church before.
Right.
But you said as you were driving by once, and correct me if I'm wrong, you saw somebody getting into the car, so you asked...
Oh, yeah, I was walking.
Okay, you were walking, and you saw somebody getting into a car, so you asked about a Bible study, is that correct?
No, I just asked them, I said, when's the church service, you know, and then she told me the church service and the Bible study or something like that, and the times or something, I guess.
Was that an African-American woman or white?
Yes. Well, this is an African Methodist... Episcopal, is that what AME stands for? I think that's what it stands for.
So that's why you went
to that
church.
Is that why you chose that church?
Oh, yes.
Because you were looking for African Americans.
Right. I wasn't going to go to another church, you know, because there could have been white people there.
So you didn't want to kill any white people? Or she didn't
kill
any?
Oh, no.
You just wanted to black people?
Right.
So the police needed to know if this was an individual hate crime or as part of a group.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that they were totally caught off guard. So they thought that he just chose a church, so that they thought it was probably a crime against a religion. But they find out that he chose that church because it's a black church and a black-only church. So they then have to regroup and they have to think how they're going to tackle this, because it's a very different crime now.
Changes everything.
It does. It does. And it's interesting that if a white person kills people of other race, it's a hate crime. But if it was... you know, someone from an Arab country, it would have been a terrorist attack. It's so weird how the dialogue is very different. And there's another episode what we're going to do soon about that too. But it's weird that they had no idea that he, as a white person, was aiming and chose his church purely because of colour.
Well, they actually ask him why he chose his hometown.
What was the reason why... Because you lived with your dad's for a while and you stayed at your mom's for a while. What was the reason why you chose Charleston as your location? Why that particular area there?
Well, the reason I chose Charleston is because, you know, it's just I like Charleston. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really nice down there. It's a historic city, you know. You know, one time, I think it had the highest ratio of black people to white people in the whole country, you know, when we had slavery. But, you know, and then the other reason is just because that AME church was historic, too. You know, it was a historic AME church. I mean, I guess that's pretty much the reason.
So he chose it because he likes the town.
Yeah, and then he starts going on with the statistics again. So, you know, we started off with a guy who, as we said, was slurring. He sounded slow. There was a deficit. Now he's into it and he hasn't been judged. Now, these officers haven't sort of gone, that's disgusting, that this was a hate crime. And because of that, he's really loosened up and he's going with it now. So he chose this church because it's black and it's his hometown, so he knows the area. And so he was able to scout this out and know where to go and where to escape to and things like that. So this is what we see a lot with serial killers, is that they go to areas that they know and they're comfortable with. So this is why he chose his hometown.
Yeah, well, the agents take him back to the events.
When you first walked in and they were having a Bible study, did anybody even acknowledge you or say anything or say, you know?
Yeah, they gave me a sheet. gave me a sheet.
So they will. They welcomed you, these people.
Right, but I mean, I didn't, like I said, I didn't say anything to them. They just handed me the sheet pretty much. There wasn't that many people there. There was only like 8 people there.
So when you walked in, there were 8 people. Was it in the main sanctuary? Was it in what do you recall when you walked in? There were 8 people. Where were they all positioned?
Just around like tables.
Around tables?
Yeah. It wasn't in the sanctuary.
Okay. So it was around tables. And yeah. Where did you position yourself? Were you in front of them? In the midst of them? Were you in back of them? To the side of them? Do you recall?
There's like a table here and a table here, you know, and I'm sitting here. Most of the other people were over here.
So next they get him to draw a map of where it all occurred before asking him to explain the next part.
When you finally thought, no, I've got to do this. I've got to, you know, you came here to do it and you told yourself you had a thought about leaving, right?
Yes, I did.
But then you said, no, I'm here, I got to do it.
Right.
And so you pulled your gun out of the bag. How many magazines did you have in your bag?
8.
Yeah, 8.
But when one was in the gun.
Yes. Yeah,
7 in the bag.
7 in the bag. Okay. Yeah. So how many times did you reload?
All the times.
So you went through all 8 magazines?
Yes. No. Actually, no. I went through 7 magazines, and I took 1 magazine with me. Which is still in the gun.
And where's the gun at now?
Well, it wasn't my car when they arrested me.
When they arrested, so the gun.
And I told them about it.
And it's got one loaded magazine. So you shot through, you had, essentially, I said you put like 10 or 11 bullets in each magazine? So the gun wouldn't malfunction, would misfeed or whatever, right?
Right.
And so you reloaded, you shot and reloaded 7 times, or am I right? One of the magazines, well, reloaded, yeah, because the last one you took with you, you shot.
Right.
One that was in there, shot it. Went through 6 more magazines shooting, and then reloaded. But by that time, I mean, people that were already down, did you walk up and shoot them that had already, you know, went to the fellows?
See, it was sort of complicated, because they were all, like, under the tables, you see what I'm saying? It's not like I was, like, going around shooting people that were already dead or anything like that. It's just, when I shot a magazine, it's like I just went, pop, 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 you see what I'm saying? Like, at one person, you see what I'm saying?
So when you started shooting, I guess, you say you were so quick shooting, it was like maybe they didn't even see where it was coming from.
Right, well, the first shots.
And they all dove under the table.
Right. Everybody dove under the table.
Everybody did.
You know, it's overkill, isn't it? 7 magazines, 11 bullets in each, 77 shots in total, and we know that 9 people died. One thing that does spring to mind when I think about those stats, Amanda, is he's not a very good shot, thankfully.
Well, yeah, because these people were sort of shot so quickly that they didn't realise, and he actually does shoot under the tables, but he doesn't go around and hunting them. You know, it's not like we saw with the Christchurch case where he kept coming back over and over again. He sort of fires around it. And I think because he's a pretty skinny, you know, 21-year-old, that I don't think he had control over it that he thought he would. So the adrenaline as well, he would have been exhausted before he even started. So, you know, I'm sure that church is peppered with gunshot purely because he had sort of gone a bit crazy trying to hold it together. Yeah.
Gotcha. In the next part, he says something a little bit odd.
And then you went around the tables to shoot them.
No, not exactly. You know, because there's some people that I didn't shoot. I think there's 2 people that I didn't even shoot at all. Like, one woman was over here, and I didn't even shoot her at all. Anyway, because she was, like, looking at me and stuff.
So you didn't shoot that one woman because she was looking at you. But actually, it's hard to shoot somebody with looking at you, right? I mean, it is.
It's hard to shoot somebody anyway.
Right.
He sounds like a coward.
Yeah, so a woman stood up to him basically and stared him down, and he chose not to shoot her. So, you know, as he said, it's actually hard to shoot people anyway, but, you know, this is where he gets a bit vague because he doesn't actually want to talk about the specifics of what he does, because he's actually quite traumatized by what he's done. He knows what he's done is bad. Of course, he still has a couple of laughs as well, but he knows that what he's done is wrong, and so he's just trying to sort of gloss over it a bit. He doesn't want to say that he hunted these people down.
Let's continue.
So the first magazine, if I'm reading about it, you pull that, you just start shooting. You go through that very quick. Everybody dies under the table.
Right.
You then reload the magazines. You like just get up and start moving around as people are under the table just shooting. You know.
Yeah, but you know, I was just sort of pacing around, you know, because I was like freaking out a little bit too. You know what I mean? It's not. There was pauses in between, and you know, thinking about, you know, what I should do and stuff. But I guess in a way, I guess you could say that's what I was doing.
I never considered the fact that a rampage killer would consider stopping during the shootings.
I know, and this is why this is a really good example, because it is showing us what their thought process is. So, you know, Roof is saying that he's freaking out whilst he's doing it, and you think that they're going to go for broke, but he actually doesn't. He sort of does what he needs to do and then leaves. He's not going to continue. Now, it can be go for broke when we see cases like Columbine, which wasn't actually meant to be a school shooting. It was supposed to be like basically a terrorist attack. But they do go to a point that their last victims are themselves, whereas he had no desire to do that. He's actually going to talk about that he did have that extra magazine in case he had to take himself out. But he had no desire to actually kill himself, and he didn't want to go down in the way that he's just killed these people. But the fact that he goes, you know, I thought about stopping, it's just so unusual to hear that.
I can feel another database coming on.
Well, I've actually started it. So, but this is a data point that we do need to consider, that is it a go for broke, or is it a do they get to a point where they go, holy shit, I have to stop?
Well, let's go back to Roof's confession as he describes leaving the church.
Okay, so after you shoot, do you leave all your magazines laying on the ground?
Yes.
Except you put a fresh one in, so your eighth magazine, you load it.
Right.
So you leave the bag there, you've got the gun. What do you do next?
Well, then I leave.
Right. Well, I mean, but you go out the door and
let the same door, I came.
Okay, and where did you go to? I mean, where's your car?
Back to my car.
And where had you parked at?
Right by the door.
Just out on the street? Or is it a parking lot?
Literally right by the store. See, so a parking space.
So this is a street parking right out here?
No. They've got a gate, you see. And then they've got parking space.
So you went into the gate and parked?
Yes.
And then got out, parked by the door, walked in, walked out. Would you mind initialing this? And write the word door right there.
Initial on this?
Well, this so it's yours, so later you can say, yeah, that's me. I mean, just write the word door right there.
You can write initial, like right above where you
were. I don't know if I said initial.
That's fine. That's okay. You don't have to. That's fine. But anyway, so you go and you get your car. And you get and leave. So where do you go?
Well, to be honest, I was an absolute awe that there was nobody out there after I had shot that many bullets. I was like, oh my God, what are these cops doing? They're not even really doing their job. If you hear how many shots, I don't know how many shots that was. You know, what is it? 7 times 11. 77. You know, there's not even a cop outside. You know, so obviously, when I walked out that door, you know, I peeked out the door. So I thought there was going to be somebody there ready to shoot me, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's really why I had the last magazine. It's not to shoot cops, it's so I could shoot myself. You see what I'm saying? When I saw a cop.
So if the law enforcement showed up, you were going to go ahead and just...
Yeah, I wasn't going to ever shoot a cop. I was going to shoot myself. But anyway, like I said, there was no cop, so I just got in my car and then... I just drove out of Charleston, you know, onto the interstate.
To 26.
It's interesting. He says he did consider killing himself.
Yeah, well, he says that now, but, you know, he had plenty of opportunities to do that. Even when he was being taken into custody, he could have done it. So I think it was more of a last resort that if he had to go down, that's the way he would do. He would go on his own terms and not the police officer's turn. But as we see, he was arrested and he's been quite compliant with his confession.
Well, the agents then ask how he became a racist.
I guess my question is, was there ever a time where you...
Right. Well, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
The first thing that, I guess I could say, I would say woke me up, you know, would be the Trayvon Martin case, you know, and that was a while back.
Right.
what was it, 2 years ago? And, you know, I kept hearing about this kid, you know, and I'm like, eventually I decided to, you know, look his name up, just type him into Google, you know what I'm saying? And then I read the Wikipedia article about Trayvon Martin, and I couldn't understand what the big deal was, you see what I'm saying? And then, for some reason, after I read that, I typed in, for some reason it made me type in the words black on white crime, and that was it, you know, ever since then.
So prior to that, you really didn't think too much about black and white relations or white and black relations?
Right, well, I mean, obviously, you know, you live in South Carolina, you know, there's so many black people here, you know. Every white person in South Carolina probably has at least a little bit of racial awareness, you know, naturally, because there's so many black people, but it's superficial, you see what I'm saying? It's no real understanding behind it.
Right. So basically, after the Trayvon Martin incident, you said it woke you up, and you did a little bit of research.
Right.
After you researched that, and you started looking at, you said, black-on-white crime, is that correct?
Right.
So what happened after that? If you could, just carry me through the, you know, you studied that. Were there other research topics that you looked into?
Well, then I found out, you know, like I said, what's happening in Europe. In a lot of ways, it's even worse over there than it is here. London's only 60% white. You know, got so many Muslims over there in Europe, they're being swamped. There's going to be a race war in Europe, too, I bet. You know, France, they don't even take demographics.
I don't even know where to begin with this.
Yeah, I mean, considering the current climate over there, it's surprising that this didn't cause more outrage than it should have. It's just so weird how ingrained their racism is, and for him to go from the horrific murder of Trayvon Martin, and he was a victim, he had done nothing wrong, and he was killed for wearing a hoodie, and he interprets that as, let's look at the switch and see how often blacks kill whites. Now, it's actually quite low, and it's not horrific, but it is about, you know, the BLM is something that we need to consider a lot, especially with cases like this. I don't know. I'm the same with you. I'm perplexed by the racism that seems to happen, especially with whites against blacks in the US. And, you know, it's a bit insightful now, so and it's a bit passionate.
Well,
this is
a good time to listen to something like this to try and understand it. But look, let's go back to the interview, and the agents then want to revisit the moment when Roof knew it was today or never.
So at some point, you then decide, okay, you have your gun, right? You bought that a while back. You go to the store and you say, all right, I'm going to buy these, but I got to get the bullets for the job.
No, I had bullets, you know. I mean, I had bought bullets weeks ago.
Okay, but did you buy the bullets with the intent of doing, of going to kill the black people? You know, I mean, if you're at the gun store and you're like, yeah, these bullets right here, these are the bullets I need to get.
Well, I guess so. I mean, you know, but I mean, I could have used them just to shoot the gun, too. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right. But you wanted, I mean,
right. I mean, I had to have enough bullets.
Right.
You know, to fill up the magazines, sure.
And the hollow points, you know, gun bullets that are known to stop people. I mean,
right.
I mean, just like we carry bullets that are, you know, we want to carry good bullets. And so you thought that, I'm just saying, did you think about it?
I mean, yeah, I thought about it.
Okay. Now, where did you buy the bullets at?
Walmart.
Just Walmart. Do you know which one?
Well, actually, I bought them at different Walmarts, you know. Not for any reason, it's just I didn't have the money, you know, to buy them all.
So you just kind of stopped. I mean, not necessarily. You go, you're at Walmart.
Well, it's only two boxes, you know, but two boxes.
So you bought one box at one Walmart and one box at another.
Yeah.
This guy killed 9 people, and he appeared not to think as deeply about it as the agents hoped that he had.
Yeah, I mean, it just proves it's not well planned out. And this is what we see with some cases. I mean, others like Columbine did actually have a clear plan, a clear plan. It actually failed, but they did try. But he just sort of thought, yeah, 77 will do. You know, I'll take 8 magazines with me. I'll have an extra 10 in case, you know, something goes wrong. But he really had no idea if he was going to walk into a group of 100 people or if he was going to walk into a group of 10. He had no idea. So he could have actually killed like half the people and they could have torn him apart then and there had he not been able to kill as many as he had or if there had been more people.
Yeah.
It just proves that he had just hoped that's what was going to happen and he didn't sort of plan an out if he needed one.
Mm. Well, next he explains what happened when he left the church.
So now we're kind of going back to what you mentioned before when you left. You're kind of in shock. Hey, the police didn't show up. I'm alive. I didn't have to kill myself. Because that's what you were going to do when you came out, right? And so you're like, where do I go? And you drove all over to you, decided to come to Charlotte.
Right.
And why did you decide to come to Charlotte?
I don't know. You know, just the names, just wanted to come to Charlotte. Okay, so it was sort of close, not too far away. Because you have a lot of gas.
Were you?
Obviously, I didn't want to use my debit card at the gas station. Because they can track it.
Yeah, track it.
But honestly, I did use my debit card eventually.
What did you use it
at? I used it at the ATM. Because I had to get more gas.
How much cash you get? Cash. You got cash at the ATM, right?
Yeah, I only got $20.
Okay, and then you went and got some gas?
Yeah.
Where at?
Yeah, that's in Charlotte.
Okay, now, then you drove out this way to Shelby. When they stopped you, were you driving or were you?
Yeah, I was driving.
And so they pulled you over? What'd you think? What went through your head?
Oh, well, I knew they were going to get me eventually anyway.
Yeah.
I was just waiting for them.
Where was the gun? I mean, did you think I
was? No, the gun was in the back seat. Oh, no.
By that time, you said, I guess I'm not going to have to kill myself, right?
Well, right. I had already decided that it's just a bad idea.
Yeah. Did you, when the policeman pulled you over, and obviously you didn't want to do that, I mean, you had decided, all right, I'm just going to give up. Okay. Did you say anything to the policeman after, when he pulled you over and he walked up to the car?
Oh, no, I didn't say anything. Just, you know, told me to put my hands on the wheel, and that's it.
He didn't tell you why he was stopping you?
No.
I mean, you knew why
he was stopping me.
Yeah. But, did you tell him I did it, or do you remember saying anything like that?
No, I didn't say anything like that. They just said, you know, are you connected to what happened? I think something like that. You know, just said yes.
Okay. And then you told him, you told him the gun's in the car.
Right, they said, is there anything in the car? And then I said, yeah, the gun's on the back seat.
Okay.
Where were you headed to when they stopped you? They turned.
Well, I was going to, this might sound sort of weird, but I was going to try to go to Nashville.
Nashville? Why?
Yeah.
Why Nashville?
Why not?
Yeah.
For no reason. I've never been to Nashville.
Yeah.
But it's sort of far away. I don't know if I've been able to make it.
So you really didn't have a good escape plan because you didn't think you'd make it out.
Right. There was no escape plan.
Had you thought about going, hey, I get some more bullets and go shoot some more people?
Oh, no. I was worn out. There's no way.
He's worn out.
Yeah, see, it's something that we don't consider, you know, because he had that massive adrenaline rush and then he had his fight or flight. Does he stay? Does he go? Is he about to get killed when he walks out this door? He had a fear of death regardless of what he is saying about trying to kill himself. He knew that that wasn't the plan. And he had fear of retribution. He didn't know that there wasn't 100 people about to walk into that church or a tactical response group or anything like that. And so he just got in his car and started driving. As he said, I was going to head to Tennessee. He didn't really care. He just needed to get out of there and didn't think that he would have got this far. So that adrenaline would have slowly sort of depleted everything and he would have been totally exhausted.
The agents then ask Ruth 2 questions and I don't think we've heard these asked before.
How do you feel personally about it? Are you glad you did it?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm glad I did it. You know, I've done it. So.
You said it was something you had to do?
Yeah, I have to do it.
If you could back up, would you do it again? I mean, that's how strongly you felt about this issue, right?
Well, at the moment, you know, if I could back up to where I was just still sitting at the table thinking about walking out, I might walk out, I'm not going to lie. But, you know.
This is interesting. He wouldn't do it again. And he didn't enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. It's quite amazing, isn't it? So, you know, you have to then ask, why did he do it if it didn't bring him the pleasure or the response that he expected? You know, it's perplexing, but it's so interesting to get that response that, no, he wouldn't do it again, and no, he didn't enjoy it. So, you know, we can hope that the next person hears this and decides not to do it either.
So is this regret?
I don't think so. You know, we're talking about an unstable man. He does have a superiority complex, and that's for sure. And his racial hatred is almost conspiracy-like. He believes that he's doing good by killing people of certain races purely because he believes that they're doing more harm to his race than he is on theirs. I mean, it's just confusing, and, you know, there is absolutely no regret, but we do have a full confession, which is good.
Mm. Well, the agents then talked to Roof about how many people died.
So if I told you 9 people died last night, how would that make you feel?
And I wouldn't believe you.
There was 9.
There wasn't even 9 people there.
There was just a little bit over 9. But it's hard when you're looking at the tables to judge people.
Okay. As you said when you went in there, you said it could have been 6, 8. You really weren't certain. You know.
Are you guys lying to me?
No, we're not.
8 people were dead at the scene. 2 were rushed to the hospital, so I guess it was 10 people were shot. Actually had gunshot injuries, that's my understanding. The 9th person died at the hospital, but 8 people were dead on the scene. They showed up. So how do you feel?
In all honesty.
Well, it makes me feel bad.
But also? But it's critical similar. I mean, your mission was to kill black people. I mean, you killed 9 black people.
Why doesn't he believe them?
I think this is from the trauma. He has blocked out what's happened. He just knows that he opened fire, and he was shooting indiscriminately, and he was more introspective. He was looking towards what he thought and what he saw rather than what was actually going on. So, you know, if they had told him that there was 20 people, he would have had to have believed that too, because he has no idea, and he's actually shut down to what has actually occurred. And it would be interesting to see if this interview had gone the same way if they had a black officer question him. I would have really loved to have seen if they had changed that. Once they found out it was a hate crime, had they brought in an officer of colour, I think that might have changed the whole conversation, which is why they stayed with 2 white officers, 2 white agents actually, just to keep him at a place that he felt respected because of his own colour.
Interesting. Well, Roof was found guilty of 33 charges resulting from the mass shooting. He was sentenced to death for the federal crimes and sentenced to 9 life sentences in state court. He sits on death row in Indiana. Amanda, what a fascinating profile. Thank you very much for bringing that to us.
Thank you. I thought it was interesting.
me too. I look forward to our next adventure as we delve into the files of Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. Thanks, Amanda. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.